This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello and welcome to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Thank you for joining us. We're your hosts. My name is Marcy Davis, and my co-host is my wonderful service dog, Fenway. And we're excited to be with you today to talk about our favorite subject, working dogs and working animals. And today we are welcoming Dr. Maggie O'Hare to the show. And Dr. O'Hare is an Associate Dean for Research, and she's also a professor in the College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Arizona. And Dr. Maggie O'Hare is amazing. She is an internationally recognized Fulbright scholar, and she is engaged in a really cool new study. And her research is focusing on the unique and pervasive ways that humans interact with animals. And we're going to be talking with her today about her research she's doing with service dogs and veterans. So this is really amazing because it's the first national clinical trial study that's been done. So I was super excited when I saw this and so glad that she could join us on the show. So come right back after these quick messages as we welcome Dr. Maggie O'Hare to Working Like Dogs.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We're thrilled to have with us today Dr. Maggie O'Hare from the University of Arizona. Hello, Dr. O'Hare, and welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, I'm just so thrilled that you could be with us because I am anxious. I've been anxious ever since I saw an article about the study that you're doing with veterans. So, well, first of all, tell us about your work at the University of Arizona and how you got into this profession.
Absolutely. So at the University of Arizona in our College of Veterinary Medicine, our flagship research program is on human-animal interaction, or the ways that we interact with animals and how it enhances human mental health and wellness, as well as that of the animal. So we are growing the largest group of faculty, staff, and student researchers on this topic nationally, if not globally. We have so many wonderful people who are passionate about studying the human-animal bond and how we can help animals and how they can help people. How I got into it is I was fortunate enough to get a Fulbright Fellowship to travel to Australia and start studying this topic. I've worked on many areas of human-animal interaction and service animals specifically for children with autism, for individuals with mobility and medical alert dogs, and most recently for veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I say most recently loosely, as we spent about the past decade studying this topic.
Wow. Well, and this study is, when did it start and when are you finishing it? Because it's a few years, right?
Yes, that is true. So right now we're doing the U Arizona Serve Study, or Service Dog and Veteran Experiences Study.
Love that name, by the way.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun to come up with. And it really centers our team as well as the participants around this common goal because, you know, the veterans that we work with, they have a lot going on in their lives. maybe the last thing they want is someone from the university calling and asking them to be in a study. But the people we work with really see the importance of this. They've seen the barriers that they face, the barriers that their fellow veterans and family members have faced, and they are looking for this evidence. So when we call, more often than not, they are ready to sign up and help. And they have been doing that for the past 15 months, actually. It's a 15-month study, and we just had our first few participants finish the full 15 months. And so we have a few more years of data collection after this.
Wow. Well, so tell me, how are veterans selected to participate?
In this study, we're working with national nonprofit service dog providers. So we work with Canines for Warriors, Canine Companions, and America's Vet Dogs. So anyone who has applied for and been approved to receive a dog from one of those organizations is invited to participate in the research.
Oh, nice. And were there any requirements? Like, did they have to have their dog for a certain amount of time? Or did the dogs have to perform certain tasks? Were there any of those kind of parameters?
So to get into the study, the person just needs to be approved to receive a dog from those organizations. And then we actually want to start working with them right away before they have the dog so that they can come into the study and we can get a baseline assessment. So what is life like at the moment without a dog? And then one group goes on to receive the dog right away and the other group stays on the waiting list as planned.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, yeah. And that's wonderful because then you really do get the good data about what life is like for them without a dog.
Yes, exactly. And just based on the nature of, you know, wait lists these days for service dogs can be pretty long. So as long as they're waiting, we are able to capture, you know, lots of rich data about what life is like without the dog. And that's really what's so important to have so that we can then see for the group that does get a dog right away, what is different in their life.
Yeah. Well, and so tell us, what all kinds of things are you tracking about the impact on their life?
We are tracking a suite of different things about the impact on their lives. We try and take a holistic approach so that we get it from many different angles. So examples of the things we do are we have a clinician assessment of their PTSD symptoms. That's important because this is someone who's external to the study, who doesn't know what we're studying or why, but is just going to track their PTSD symptoms.
Tell our listeners what PTSD is, Dr. O'Hare.
I would be happy to. So PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. This is a mental health diagnosis following trauma. Now, every person's experience is unique, but there are some key symptoms such as flashbacks and nightmares, isolation, and hypervigilance. And what we know about PTSD is that it's incredibly difficult to treat. There are some wonderful evidence-based frontline treatments, and still veterans are also seeking more to expand and improve their outcomes.
Yeah, yeah, that is so important because I know that the suicide rate is so high for our veterans. And so I'm just so thankful that you're doing this work and that we can really look at how these amazing, adorable canines can have such an impact and change their lives and help them in coping with PTSD.
Absolutely. And you're so right. The suicide rates among veterans are extraordinarily high. I mean, veterans are dying by suicide at more than double the rate of civilian adults. And if you look at the metrics, it's estimated that 17 veterans die by suicide every single day.
Yeah, it's so hard to even get our heads around.
It is.
Yeah. Well, that's why this is so important.
Exactly. And that's one of the things, you know, it's not uncommon for veterans to tell us, I would not be alive if it were not for my service dog. And yet, despite that, there can be challenges and barriers to both getting a service dog, receiving support for that dog, whether it be through policy access, insurance coverage. There's a lot of key barriers that are relying on data or evidence to open that gate for them.
Yeah. And are you tracking all that in your study?
We are tracking as much as possible for each individual case. We look at barriers they're facing. We also look at stigma that they might be facing before or after the service dog. So we look at it on an individual level, but we're hopeful that the data will be helpful on a more broader community a nationwide level.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know there are a lot of barriers. I've talked with a lot of veterans and I have had them tell me exactly the same thing, that they're alive because of their service dog. Yeah. But there are so many barriers with the waiting list, with the whole application process can be very intimidating when you start going through that and start having to share all this personal information. And yet the agencies need it in order to make their decisions about what's best for their dogs. And, and if you are ready and capable of that relationship, because it's a big responsibility, as you know.
Absolutely. It's a huge responsibility. And it's so different to many other types of interventions where the key, say, active ingredient of the treatment is not necessarily a living, breathing creature that needs and requires care.
Right.
It's certainly unique.
It is. I know. And I will never forget my first day when I got my first dog decades ago. That's what they told us, is we are not giving you a robot. We are giving you a living, breathing thing that has emotions and needs, and it's your responsibility. That's right. To meet all of those.
Yes.
And that can be overwhelming when you're dealing with any kind of disabling experience. It can be very, very challenging.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's why it's so important to have, you know, the right organization or partner to shepherd you through the process. So all of the organizations we work with, you know, partner with the veterans, they help them through the application process. They talk with them, they learn about their needs. And it's a really tailored, guided process set up to help the person and to help the dog.
And I'm guessing that all of these agencies are members of Assistance Dogs International.
They are, for the most part. But everyone is following the highest standards possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm sure that, I know that ADI has such high standards that agencies have to comply with. But I'm sure that all of the agencies you have participating they'd have to be able, to really be able to do this work.
Yes, absolutely agree.
Are you tracking the different commands that the dogs can do for the veterans? Anything specific to that? The tasks?
Yes, absolutely. So we are asking that. And that's one of the neat lines of research we've been working on, is that, you know, the organizations work so hard to prepare the dogs in certain tasks. And then once they leave their doors, it's been a little bit unknown, you know, what are people actually using and how often and what's the most valuable? So we did do a study on that, and we found that veterans are using a few specific tasks the most often. So typically they are trained in 5 tasks for PTSD. And those include things like interrupt or alert to anxiety, where the dog initiates it, calm or comfort for anxiety, where the human requests it. There are some positional tasks or commands where the dog stands in a certain position to help the veteran feel confident and comfortable in public, whether that's behind them or in front of them. And then there's the social greeting task to make a friend, which may not sound necessarily as one of the official tasks, but when you're thinking about veterans and the isolation they've faced, that's actually one that can help bridge the gap to bring them back into society.
Yeah, that one is so important. I know that when I was getting my first dog, they told me, oh, it's going to have a big impact on your social life. And I was like, yeah, okay. I had no clue of the impact it was going to have. And because as any person with any kind of disability, it can be very daunting to have social interactions under the best circumstances.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but I can only imagine with PTSD how challenging that could be. And when you've got this beautiful, friendly wagon tail that's accompanying you, it really opens doors and brings smiles that you wouldn't experience otherwise.
Exactly. It's so different than any other intervention that I've seen. And even, you know, if you're walking with a dog versus walking by yourself, you'll see how many more people smile and say hello.
Right. Yes.
Actually, it's something that can be challenging for our veterans. Sometimes they do just want to be invisible and go their day. But I think that we've seen that can build resilience as well as new strategies.
Yeah. Well, just somebody being willing to make eye contact with you that might have looked away and made you feel inferior. Yeah. Yeah. Just having a much more positive energy, like you said, with a smile. Yeah. Can make a whole difference. But I also really hear what you're saying, though. It can also cause other stresses, because I always say now there's no just running to the grocery store anymore. Right. Yes. When I have Fenway on my arm, people want to know, they want to touch him, they want to know what he does. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. And he sounds quite beautiful, and that people would definitely want to say hello.
Well, he has no self-esteem issues, just let me say that. And he doesn't mind catching a glimpse of himself in the mirror or right? in a window. Yes.
Sure, I'm sure.
Yes, yes. As all of these dogs are so amazing, and their confidence level, I know his confidence level gives me confidence when I'm out in public. And I know that that's so helpful to our veterans to have that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a different level of having your back.
Yes. And they say that. They say, this is my battle buddy. And, you know, I've got someone by my side again.
That's right. That's right. That thinks you're the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. Yes. That is true.
Yes. That's one of the most wonderful things about them. No matter how you're feeling or looking or, yeah, they look at you like you're the greatest thing on the planet. Yeah.
Absolutely. That unconditional positive regard is rated very highly when we ask people about what's important to them about their dog.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love it. Well, we are going to take just a quick break and hear some important messages from our sponsors and who we love. And we are going to come right back and continue talking with Dr. O'Hare about her incredible work. So come right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We're visiting today with Dr. Maggie O'Hare from the University of Arizona, and she is telling us all about the fabulous study that she and her colleagues are engaged in, the Service Dog and Veteran Experiences Study. I love that name. The acronym is SERVES, which is so perfect. And it's just amazing all of the different indicators that you're recording and all of the different data that you're gathering in the study. And because there's so much anecdotal information out there, we think all of these things are beneficial, but you're really gathering data and showing evidence that it is. So tell us, when are you going to be publicizing your results, or what results are you seeing so far? Can you tell us about that, Dr. O'Hare?
Yeah, absolutely. So it will be a few years until we have the results of the SERVE study, but we do know a few things from our decade of research so far. Most recently, we did an NIH-funded clinical trial. It was nationwide with 156 veterans. Now, about half of them received a service dog and the other half were on the waiting list. So we did an assessment right away before anyone had a dog, and then 3 months later. What we found is that the group that had a dog for only 3 months already had clinically significantly lower levels of PTSD symptoms of their trauma. They were 66% odds lower of having a diagnosis of PTSD after just 3 months. They also showed better quality of life, less depression, anxiety, And we also looked at their stress hormone pattern. So we had them collect saliva samples to look at stress hormone physiology. And after just 3 months, those with a dog showed a stress hormone profile through cortisol that was more like healthy adults who don't have PTSD.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I love that. And where did you publish these? Where's the data available?
So this study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA, Network Open. It's free, publicly available online on their website.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because like I said, everything is anecdotal, but actually having some numbers and data to show the, that impact and really document it is just really groundbreaking.
Yes, we were so excited to be able to share that back with the veterans and with, people who are asking for this information, because there's, a few reasons why this research is so critical. Some people think, well, we already love our dogs. We know this. Why do we need science behind it? And actually, there's several areas where science is critical to be able to provide policies that support individuals with service dogs, public access, for example, or clinicians who need evidence. You know, if you go to the doctor because you have difficulty seeing and they know what scan to run, then they look at the evidence. They know what treatment to provide. Right now, when someone comes in and says, I think a service dog might help for my PTSD, clinicians don't necessarily have the evidence that they need to provide the same guidance that they would for the other forms of treatment that they typically provide if you have any other medical condition.
Yeah, and that is so important because people have biases. You know, some people love dogs, some people don't and don't see the value. So yeah, having that documented value and impact, I think is going to be a huge game changer.
Right, absolutely. And I think that our veterans are wanting that. And that's why when we call them, they are ready to partner in these studies.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. And you mentioned NIH. Tell us, who is NIH and is that who's funded your study?
Yes. So the study I just talked about was funded by the National Institutes of Health, or the NIH, which is the largest funder of health and medical research in the United States. So it shows an investment that they are interested in these findings and helping these veterans.
I hope that your funding is not some of the funding that's being cut currently in research. Is it, Dr. O'Hare?
Right now, our studies appear to be ongoing, so we're gonna keep working on them as long as we can.
Good. Oh, good. Well, I was wondering that if your funding might be in jeopardy for this study.
You know, we're watching the situation closely and we're very grateful for the funding we do have. We also are always in need of more funding.
Yes.
The research can't run itself. So every single person on my team, every single supply we send in the mail, that all requires funding. Even we also pay veterans an amount of money for their time that they take on these studies. So we are always fundraising. It's an operation that we're so grateful for any support that we can have to make this work possible.
Yeah, I hear you. And I'm sure that also, when you're talking about the benefits of your work, that will benefit service dog organizations in their pursuit of funding. Yeah, the same thing. Yeah, they need
right.
good data for funders.
You got it. You got it. Exactly. That's another reason, right? The wait lists are so long for these dogs, and the organizations providing the dogs are typically nonprofit. They need to raise the funds to support these dogs. And without, the data and the metrics from an independent organization, it can be harder to get that.
That's right. Yeah. You're that third party objective. Yeah.
Exactly.
Objective researcher. Yeah. It's critical. Yeah. Now more than ever.
And, the last reason that I'll mention that we think the research is so important is that a service dog, like any other intervention, can be improved. You know, if you think about whatever the last medical treatment or medication you took is, let's say it was just Tylenol, you know, that's not the first formulation that was ever invented. People have worked hard over time to make it more efficient, more effective, less side effects. And although we don't often think about service dogs in the same way, I think we can. And I think it's even more important because you can make it better for the person and also better for the animal.
Mm-hmm. And have you made any recommendations about that or findings about that specifically?
You know, we're just in the first phases of building up the information we have on the dog side. We're really proud that we host the Arizona Canine Cognition Center led by Dr. Evan McLean. And we're partnering with him and his teams to look at lots of specific dog things. So they run amazing temperament tests on the dogs so that we'll be able to see which dogs might pair best with which human. You know, it's certainly not a linear thing. It's not, you know, all dogs like this will be the best. It's actually dogs like this might be best with, you know, this high energy person, and dogs like this might be best with this shy individual. So we're going to learn a lot about the dogs. We already know a lot about the humans and see where the match makes the most sense. And we also are looking at dog stress physiology. So we're going to be looking at the same stress hormone in dogs that we looked at in people. And lastly, we have the dogs wear a special collar worn device that's going to tell us about their sleep and activity levels. So this study will give us by far the most information to date that we've had on the dogs themselves.
Yeah, that is going to be so interesting to see the results.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait to see that, because I was curious about if you were doing any work and if you had any thoughts about dogs who are better suited for certain jobs or certain tasks that they're doing for veterans and for certain, like you said, personality types.
Right. Absolutely. We do have some initial findings so far. We not, you know, as comprehensive as I just mentioned, but we do see that dogs who are less excitable when they see or meet a new person tend to be associated with better PTSD outcomes for the veteran. So it's a very initial finding, but it's the first one we see where the dog's temperament and behavior is actually directly linked to later outcomes for the human.
I could see that. Yeah. And have you seen differences in breeds for that as well?
You know, we have quite a few breeds in our study, so we were excited to look at that, but we haven't seen any breed-related outcomes yet. In our last study, we had 22% Labrador Retriever, 23% Lab Golden or GSD Mix, and then 11% Golden Retriever. Then we had a lot of mixed breeds or unidentifiable, and these weren't through genetic testing. It was just sort of the report. And some of these are purpose bred. Some of them are shelter or rescue. So I think we just had so much variety that it was hard to see whether or not there was a pattern, but we'll certainly keep looking.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have had two pure goldens, and several labs. And it's really interesting. The goldens that I have experienced are very focused and do not want to be petted or touched. Like Fenway, when he's out in public, he's like, don't bother me, I'm working.
Yeah.
But the labs are like, hey,
yeah,
you like my vest? It's cute, right?
Yeah,
they're very good at their jobs, but they're way more interested in other people than the goldens. Yeah, and I just wondered if you were seeing that with different breeds.
Well, yeah. I'm going to keep an eye out for that, certainly, when we have more data to find out. And you know, it's also important to think about, it depends on the person, right, and what they want and what their needs are, because in some cases, that social engagement might be really helpful, and in other cases, it might really distract from the work that's needed in that moment.
Yeah, it's so true. Again, it goes back to that matching and the personality of both the dog and the, and too, because sometimes the dogs need that. I know my labs, Lovey needed that. Yeah, but the golden, Fenway does not. He does not need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's very confident in who he is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Well, and so how much longer do you have for this study?
It should be done in the next probably 3 years. I think we'll see the findings there. And we're also just starting a study after that follows on to that, because we can't have a dull moment in this work.
Right.
We always have to keep going. So we've just started, that was the serves study. Now we're starting serves plus, which builds on it and really looks at how the service dog can integrate into what we call evidence-based care. So that means the treatments that are already out there that doctors are already prescribing for PTSD, how can a service dog build in and potentially help those? I think the key here is that veterans deserve every opportunity available. Some people say every tool in the toolbox that they can use. And so looking at how the service dog might help veterans engage in and make it through some of the more difficult treatments to stay in for PTSD.
I could see that. And that's, we do. We need as many resources as we can access.
Exactly.
Yeah. And like you said, it changes and evolves and enhances. And that's our responsibility, is to make sure that happens so that we all can evolve, both the dogs and the recipient.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there has been an idea from some people that if you get a service dog, at least for PTSD, well, maybe you might ignore your other treatments and that would be a bad thing. And this study is designed to identify whether, in fact, it might be quite the opposite, that if you are home alone and you can't leave your house, it might be pretty hard to access treatments. But once you have a dog and you build some confidence and you get back out there, you can engage in and get more out of those other treatments instead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know our time is coming to an end and I could talk to you about this all day, but I do want to ask you, it sounds like you have such a vibrant program and you have so much going on at the University of Arizona. Do you have opportunities or any kind of certificate programs for people who may not be researchers and getting a long-term degree, but do you have any other opportunities?
We have lots of opportunities for ongoing education. We don't have a specific additional degree right now. We have our amazing College of Veterinary Medicine, where if people are interested in getting their degree in that, I welcome them to learn more about our innovative 3-year program. And then beyond that, for the research element, we have tons of opportunities for students to get involved and learn more. And then if you're not a student here and you're not coming here, the other way you can get involved is that we have a human-animal interaction lecture series where we have experts around the nation give engaging talks about interacting with animals and humans and how that changes both of their lives. That is open and free to anyone.
Ooh, that sounds fascinating. How can our listeners get more information about that program, the lecture series, about your study, about your program? Yeah, how can they get more info or find you guys?
Absolutely. So if they Google College of Veterinary Medicine, Human-Animal Interaction, Arizona, they can learn more about my work, about our team's work, and about the many other exciting studies that are happening here at University of Arizona in our College of Veterinary Medicine, where the flagship research program is how we interact with animals and how it changes both of our lives.
Well, it is wonderful what you're doing. Thank you so much for this work. I cannot wait to see the results of the study and really see the data of the impact and all of the valuable information that you're collecting that is going to have such a huge impact on the future of this industry.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me and making the space to share this today.
Absolutely. Well, we want you to come back and tell us more about the work that you're doing. Yeah. And about the Serves Plus. I love that name for your next study. I'm so glad to hear that you guys are already working on that. I had no doubt that you were. That's so wonderful.
Never a dull moment here. We are always working on something to help people and animals.
Yes. Well, you are doing a fabulous job and we are all benefiting from your work. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcy.
Well, thank you, our listeners, for being with us. We love for you to join us, and you know how much we love for you to stay connected with us. So please, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a future show, you know you can always email me and Fenway at Marcie, M-A-R-C-I-E, at PetLifeRadio.com. So thanks so much for being with us. We look forward to seeing you again in the future. And take good care.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.